Mr. Gay Wan Gui, Rue 21. Mr. Gay, what did you know of these various news about the matters?
As I said, we used to gather at a coffee shop, huh? Especially the coffee shop of Mr. Martin Chen. And in our conversation, one of us, we don't know which one, would just pass on the message, or somebody from Singapore would say, why you all worry, soon we'll all be free. Huh? It's the end, it's the end. So why? Didn't you hear? Atom bomb, Japanese hobbies, that kind of thing. How? Hiroshima, and then I say, Nagasaki also, man, that kind of thing. Yeah? So we just ask for particulars and shh, and just get quiet when people pass by. That kind of thing, you see. Every now and then we would hear news of that kind, a word thrown in here, there. And in the evenings, we used to see four engine bombers pass over and out. Where they were heading for, we didn't know. And everything added up to the point that the Japanese conquest here was declining, was going to end.
These news were mainly from visitors from Singapore.
Obviously, and it spread out. Nobody, I think, would dare to keep any set in Endow. It was such a small community that if you kept a set, somebody would know. And could you tell who among the people there was the spy?
Did you notice any changes in terms of attitudes of people or the conditions of the settlement during the later part of the occupation?
No changes, but it was much later, you know, that after the surrender, that I learned several hawkers with vegetables and sweet potatoes, which usually line the road, you know, had grenades, you know, covered with underneath their vegetables. You know. They had grenades ready, you know, covered underneath the vegetables and some weapons, I suppose. You know. All along strategic points, you know, these people who are supposed to be selling vegetables and sweet potatoes and whatnot. The reason, I suppose, would be to protect the settlement or to give a fight in case the Japanese garrison that was stationed nearby would suddenly get into their heads to come and raid the settlement and start destroying, going berserk and destroying the settlement, then they could hit back. I don't know how true that was, but that was what I heard. So, and you remember the incident I told you of the meeting in the middle of the jungle. That was a much earlier preparation, foresight of the decline of this Japanese occupation.
Were these people the settlers, or were they members of the anti-Japanese forces?
No, could not say all of them poor, but I think they all knew. You leave it to the Chinese, eh? They could feel it, but they wouldn't express it in their faces, or you could not read the expression at all. They were wise enough not to show any emotion. They would leave it to those people who were involved or concerned with the matter.
Did you notice any changes from the organizers or the departmental officers?
No, everything went off quite normally. We went off we met, we played chess, we drank coffee, we laughed, and brought out the whiskey, which was incidentally concocted by Doctor of Philosophy Chemistry, who made the whiskey, famous whiskey called Nambuhu, out of potatoes. And we met as if nothing happened, but all knowing well, full well. But my belief is, among the elite, there was already a movement after the Japanese occupation to start some independent movement, a nucleus, because I found some of the people there later forming a nucleus which later sowed the seeds of the movement that led to the independence of Singapore.
When you heard of the news of the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, were there any confirmation, official confirmation of that?
Of Hiroshima?
Was there any official confirmation of the news of the bombings at Hiroshima and Nagasaki?
From whom?
The Japanese or even the organizers?
Oh no, nobody there to confirm it. Nobody dared to confirm any bad news against the Japanese army, except perhaps if the Japanese themselves. I wondered if the thing appeared in the Shonan Shinbun. Perhaps it did mention that a horrible bomb was used against them. They might have mentioned in the papers, but we were not allowed to see anything that was against them.
So did the settlers hear of the news of the Japanese surrender?
Oh yes. The moment the surrender was news was announced, it spread. I think within hours, we all knew.
When was it announced?
It was not announced publicly, but as I said already, we saw certain of these young farmers whom we saw doing farming and tilling of the land around the hills surrounding the settlement. Instead of holding the chunkles, they were holding guns. One of them leaving walked by and said, "Hey, hello, Atiya. What's that? Is that a real gun?" I said, "Of course it's a real gun." "It's a real gun." I said, "You mean you know how to shoot it, use it?" He smiled. He said, "Yes, I've been practicing with it for some time." He said, "You mean you are a member of the army?" He said, "Not a member, but I know how to use it." Of course, all this spoken in Hokkien. And you can see these people are all posted at strategic places. Even after they have heard the surrender and have these arms in their hands, they are put there to guard against any disorder.
When did that happen?
Obviously, on the day of the surrender.
Did the Japanese ever make any announcement to the settlers that they had surrendered?
Not that I didn't hear. I didn't hear, but everybody seemed to know it. Everybody seemed to know it in their head. There was no such thing, no rejoicing, I suppose, no shouting, no yelling. Because I think it would be wise not to irritate, you know, not to make a loser angry. They might be angry and go mad, because there were still some garrisons scattered here and there. And not wise to rub it in, right? The best is all right. We have lost. But the next day, we saw brought in one Japanese officer, trussed like a pig, on a long pole, with a nose and ears cut off. It was a horrible sight. I saw that, but my friend saw another one. He said he had his eyes gouged out. Oh, it's the most horrible. I said, please don't talk.
The day after?
After, obviously after the day of the surrender. So vengeance was sought, and the Japanese did suffer.
These were done by the anti-Japanese members? Or
obviously. Must have been by the Japanese anti-Japanese people. It couldn't have been done by the settlers. The settlers, I think, had no good reason for doing it.
What were your reactions and the reactions of the settlers when all of you knew of the news of the surrender?
You're happy, but a subdued kind of happiness. Especially when they saw the atrocities meted out of the Japanese. They realize that the best is not to show too much emotion or to arouse too much emotion, because as it is, the results are so horrible, that it might be worse. There might be bloodshed. After all, the victorious troops are not here to keep law and order, and the Japanese occupation troops are still here. They can open fire and create havoc before the arrival of the Allied forces. And what could you do? After they have wrought havoc, they can say, we are sorry. Oh, so sorry. And then where do we stand? So I think the leaders must have managed to persuade the settlers to keep calm. So the best thing they could do was to prevent their own people from looting the shops. There were still many shops in the village stocked with rice, sugar and things. And the Japanese stores full of provisions. Now these places are a great temptation for the local people to loot, including the Malays, I may say, villagers who are ignorant. So the best is to leave the Japanese there. Don't disturb them. Don't go there and tell them that you have lost, we are going to take over. No. Let them stand there and guard. They still have a right to shoot anybody who try to loot their stores. So the takeover period was very well done, done in such a way that there was very little bloodshed. So in that way we should be grateful to the anti-Japanese army people. That's why in the victory march they were given the place by Lord Mountbatten in the victory march.
Did the Japanese come to the Andal settlement after the surrender?
Oh no, they were not there before, during the whole period of the settlement. Practically, they shouldn't. It was not wise for them to turn up at this crucial moment, you see.
Besides the few people that you mentioned who came out with their arms, did the anti-Japanese forces come out from the jungle and take over the settlement?
No, they didn't check except 10 guards. on the outskirts. They didn't push their weight around. They didn't just come up like that, push their weight around and say that now we are the boss, we are in charge. No, no. They don't have to. People know their capabilities. You see?
So did the departmental officers continue to run the settlement?
Yes. And evacuation of the settlement back to Singapore this time was done smoothly by batches. If you had lorries, you just go there and mention your lorry is coming and which families are leaving. And tell the office, and the office will take off the names of the families, and there you go.
Did the anti-Japanese members come into the settlement and stay there?
Some they don't have to, you know, because quite a number of them are already members of the families who quietly were connected or involved in this anti-Japanese movement.
What about others? Did they come in to stay in the settlement?
That I wouldn't know. I saw only a few uniforms. Obviously, a great number of them had no uniforms, but they were still carrying guns.
So they did not take over the running of the settlement at all?
No, no. They wouldn't know how to administer the place anyway.
During that time, before evacuation back to Singapore began, were there any revenge killings besides those that you mentioned on the Japanese? What about revenge killings on the settlers or other local people around the area?
That I wouldn't know, because we, from then on, we kept strictly at home. In fact, my family and I, we went back, we sold our pig, we sold whatever we could sell on the farm and moved back to our friend's place in a settlement, you know, so that we could be ready when the lorry was available to board the lorry and come back. So we packed our things already in our rather 10 bags. So we knew nothing. We kept ourselves to ourselves. We dare not move out.
Did you hear anything about what was happening outside?
We did hear of some killings in the paddy field, but that was about all. But we didn't dare to go out to investigate. Even nobody dared to go out to investigate, for fear of, I suppose, of being mistaken for a spy or a stooge. Yeah?
Did you hear of incidents within the settlement itself?
No. We heard so-and-so was shot, that was about all. But that so-and-so, I wouldn't know who it was. Eh?
Did you hear of many people who were being shot?
No, not many.
Where was your friend staying?
I think Lorong 6. Lorong 6, Lorong 7. Mr. Lau. He's now in Australia.
In the community hut?
Yes, transit hut. He also moved out, you see. Yeah, back to old transit huts.
Did a lot of people from their own houses move out to these huts?
I suppose if they were ready to get a lorry to take them out to Singapore, they would have to move out. Because it would be impossible for the lorry to go into the through the jungle path to their settlement.
When did the evacuation begin?
Mine did not take place until 3 months afterwards. Until 3 to 4 months afterwards. It was very early. I was very lucky.
When did the first batch return back to Singapore?
I have no idea.
Who were the people in charge of the evacuation program?
As I said, no special person. Somebody would, suppose a relative would say, we have got a relative in Andal, we are going to send one lorry up. They go, who are your relatives? And then mention, they say, alright, you send a lorry up. That's all. And then you go there, go to the office and check the names. Just write a letter, somebody will bring the letter up and say, yeah, we have managed to get a lorry for you.
So who were these people in charge of all these things?
The administrative section would still be functioning, you see. And usually get in touch, the address would be there, and you get in touch with it.
The same people who were running the place?
Yes.
At that time, did the British Army
come
to the settlement?
No, we didn't see any of them yet.
Could you tell us how did you come back to Singapore?
No, we came back to Singapore, we just came back straight to our house. I came back straight to my father's place. Yeah.
How did you leave Andal? I mean, the procedures for leaving Andal?
I just said goodbye and went there, said goodbye to the administrative officers and your friends, and then just went on. Very uneventful. It was a tiring journey, hot and very tiring. We just went down.
How did you get the lorry?
That was my friend's lorry, actually. My wife paid her over 100 Singapore dollars. They would not take Japanese money or Singapore money. I think over $100. We had to take some time paying that back because we had not a single Singapore dollar with us.
Did you know how they get the lorry?
No, I have no idea. The relatives in Singapore arranged for it.
So, yourself and your
wife? Friends, family. My wife and myself are two children, and my friend, his wife and two children.
Did you have to register at the administrative office to say that you are leaving the settlement already?
I think they must have cut us off. We just told them we had something in front of them. I didn't enter the office. My friend went and did all these things for us.
On the way back from Andal, did you meet with any incidents or do you see any other anti-Japanese forces along the way?
No, except in one place we saw people with a star, you know. I suppose it was the anti-Japanese people with a star cap. You know? And beyond that, there was nobody else.
Any Japanese soldiers?
No. They made themselves scarce.
Did you see the British Army?
No.
Any problems?
There wasn't any problem at all. Just came on street. You know?
Did people leave the Andal settlement even before the evacuation officially began?
I have no idea. Because when I heard and saw people selling their things cheaply, I realized something was afoot. As I said, I was living in my own home. It's a own house in a jungle. I knew very little. So when I sold my pig for Japanese money, the Japanese money was useless the next day. I was cheated of a few thousand dollars for nothing.
You mean you couldn't use it at all?
Couldn't use it at all. Nobody wanted the money.
When you reached Singapore, did you have to make any kind of reports to any office?
No. I didn't have to report to anybody.
What were your feelings when you first arrived in Singapore.
Oh my goodness. The feeling of suddenly morning has come, that kind of thing. As if you're living through a dark night, living through a nightmare, living through a bad dream, you know. And suddenly you wake up and say, it was all a dream, all so untrue, and yet it was so, all so real while it lasted. And now everything is so, so different. Back to old Singapore.
Do you remember when did you arrive in Singapore?
Again, you see, I'm very poor at dates. I mean, it was 1945, is it? Sometime that day. And then I went to Tamil Road, my father's place, stayed a few days, and then went to my friend's place to stay. And then I moved to several places, all in a daze. And I had the busy job of getting a school together to wait for the principal to be sent out by the Presbyterian Mission. The Presbyterian Mission was going to take over the school, and they asked me to help in putting the school together and wait for him to come. And he came, his name, Mr. B.F. Atherton. He came and took over from me. And at the time it was called the Chung Guan School.
Did you arrive in Singapore a few months after the surrender, or a few weeks after the surrender?
This principal.
Did you arrive in Singapore after the...
After the surrender.
How long after the surrender?
You mean after the official surrender, I mean? I have no idea, you know. Either I witnessed the official surrender at City Hall or not. You see, all these dates, in fact, I was so excited and so busy with putting the school together. I think sometime after the surrender, if I'm not mistaken, that everything was done, it was finished. They signed the documents at City Hall and so on, and between Yamashita and Lord Wee Mountbatten, right?
Did you witness that?
No.
When you returned to Singapore, what were your observations of the conditions in Singapore at that time?
Well, everybody was happy. It was sort of a period of revelry, you know, period of reconstruction, period of excitement. There is an undercurrent of liveliness and cheerfulness and restlessness. During the day, people seem to put all their energy in work, and at night, they enjoy themselves, and the British occupation forces, the Allied occupation forces, of course, enjoy themselves at night. There were a lot of roadside cafes. Any open space, like the one outside here, will be occupied with tables and chairs, as singers and young girls acting as waitresses, and beer drinking. There was no holes barred. They would be dancing, singing. The occupation soldiers enjoying themselves, relaxing, you see, having a lot of good time.
What about the damages done by the war and the preoccupation? Were they still very visible?
But surprising thing was that the Japanese, knowing that Singapore was such an important prize, did very little damage to the important installations in Singapore. So there was very little damage to be mended. So So very soon all these were made good. And the most important thing